Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Well, hello and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English. We have a special event tonight. I'm really excited about that. So glad that you're joining me here this evening. Well, you know, there's something about a way a storyteller paints a picture with their words that lets us see lives and events play out in our mind, like a movie screen. Our guest tonight is one of those unique storytellers who draw you into the world she's built, and it lives with you even after you've turned the last page. Her novel, Shadow the Hawk, is a blend of John Steinbeck's realism and unforgettable characters and John Grisham's suspenseful murder trials. And in that mix is her own unique author's voice, graceful, impactful, and gripping. I would like to introduce our guest to you, Karen Jones. Welcome, Karen.
Hi, Sheila. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, it's great. I'm glad that we could fit all this in. I know that you're busy. This book sounds like everything's going really well, and people have just been very well received, so that's exciting. Now, Shadow of the Hawk, which you've written under the name K.S. Jones, tell us a little bit about the overall story, just enough so that our listeners are kind of familiar with the plot.
Oh, absolutely. It's a Depression-era story. It takes place in a dwindling little community on the Oklahoma-Arkansas border. Now, lots of stories set during this time period tell about the migration westward with people fleeing the Dust Bowl. But this story is actually different. In Shadow of the Hawk, these folks stay. They stay on their Arkansas farm. It's a story about love and family and the sacrifices that they make to keep both of those alive.
Now, before we get too much farther, I just want to let our listeners know that the live chat session is open. I do see that we have some people in there. You're welcome to comment or ask questions there, or you can call us. The number is 646-200-4071, and that is listed on the website if you didn't get to jot that down. There's also a toll-free number I'm going to give you, 877-497-5906. And we invite you just to call in and chat with us and ask questions. And I know many of our listeners like to check out the website of our guests during the show, and you can find that at ksjones.com. I do encourage you to go over and take a look at her website. There's a lot of information that might inspire some questions. And then once we're done with the show, we'll go ahead and put the podcast up on readersentertainment.com. I know there are a lot of people who subscribe to this show who listen to it after the fact. And if any of you have questions or comments, you know, tomorrow that podcast will go up on Readers Entertainment, and you can always post your comments or questions there. I'll make sure that Karen knows that you put something there, and she can go over there and answer those questions, so you can do that. I want to talk about the characters, especially about Suze, but first I wanted to ask you, why did you choose this particular time period?
Well, my parents were actually just kids when the Great Depression hit America. So as a child growing up, I listened to their stories and all the events which shaped their lives with absolute fascination. The time period itself fascinated me, as well as the things that they did as children and the things that they didn't do as children that we do today. Now, keep in mind, both my mother and father were writers, so they had great storytelling abilities. Hopefully I got a little bit of that from them. I feel like I did anyway. I was just hooked on their recollections of what their life had been like during those days. But honestly, being a girl myself, it was my mom's memories that resonated with me the most. Her stories, more than any of the others, influenced the writing of this book.
Now, you know, it's interesting because my great-grandmother actually, I mean, she did the whole Route 66 thing. She actually came to California from Oklahoma in a covered wagon during that time period.
Wow.
She was, yes, and, you know, she wasn't a writer, but she was definitely a storyteller. And I think that's why I have such an immense interest in that time period, because to me, it's alive. You know what I mean? It's like you know those stories. You've heard a real live person convey those stories.
Absolutely. And I'm actually glad that you mentioned that, Sheila, because in Shadow of the Hawk, the family does not own an automobile. They own a wagon. And there were lots of folks that were a little skeptical of that. They thought that everyone by the 1930s owned an automobile, and they most certainly did not. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, and you know, it's just kind of an interesting aside. She still owned that wagon when I was a child, and it ended up being donated to our local museum. But you're right. You know, everybody thinks, oh, by that time, you know, that everybody's got a car, and that absolutely, positively was not the case. She ended
That's
up with a car later on when she worked, when she got to California. But, no, everybody came in that wagon. So that
That's right.
That was just kind of interesting. Now, what kind of research, you know, I know you had conversations with your parents, but what kind of research did you have to do for this? Like anything in particular for the trial, maybe?
Oh, well, actually, that's an excellent question. I wanted this book to be a genuine, authentic representation of small-town life in the 1930s. So I actually spent more than 15 years researching and writing this story. Part of my research included personal interviews and letters from folks who lived during that time, quite a few from the place that this story actually takes place in. But as far as the trial is concerned, I spent months and months and months researching the facts and the experiences of real-life cases that occurred during that time. Like, for instance, the Scopes trial, the Sweet trial, the trial of the Scottsboro Boys, among others. I studied the actual trial transcripts, the summations, plus, of course, all the newspaper and personal eyewitness accounts that I could find to frame up a realistic trial for Shadow of the Hawk.
Wow, that's a lot. It definitely shows in the writing.
Thank you.
You really do. Yeah, it's like you really do feel like everything is very authentic. It all sounds very authentic. And now I know why. That's a lot. Now,
Thank you.
Me a bit. Yeah, I really get, well, you know, and you and I have talked, you know, before this interview, we've talked off and on. You know that I absolutely love that time period. I really, really, I wish I could just get the listeners to just read one page, just read that first page. They would be hooked. You just have such a beautiful way with words.
And oh, that's wonderful to hear.
Oh, I was immediately just pulled right in, and I loved that. I really did. Now, tell me a little bit about the town where this all takes place. Is this a place that you've actually been? Is this a real town?
Yes, actually, it is a real place. Now, remember, the story itself is fictional, but Shadow of the Hawk takes place in a small little community called Coaldale. Today, it's nothing but a blip on an Arkansas map, but it does still have several homes, a church, and a cemetery. Coaldale is where my mother was born, and she lived there until she was about 8 years old, and then her and her family made the trip to California, as most folks seem to have done back then, but they could not find what they wanted and needed, and so they actually came back to Coaldale. And they did that two or three times during the 1930s, during the early 1930s. So I've actually visited Coaldale several times with my mother, including taking her on her last trip home. On that trip, we spent 2 days revisiting all the sites that she had loved so much as a child, and I was just totally immersed in her memories. And I still had a few years left before finishing this book, frankly, so the visit added a lot of flavor to the story.
See, that would be, that would just be a dream. I wish I could have been able to kind of go back and relive those memories with my great-grandmother. But that would be, I mean, talk about research. That's something you can't get from a book. You can't get from a picture, an article. So
that's
amazing.
Right.
Let's go ahead and talk about Suze. Suze would do anything to help her family. She's only 16 years old, but she goes through a lot during the course of the book. What was a 16-year-old girl like at that time?
Well, both boys and girls in the 1930s were actually very mature. The girls worked right alongside their mothers from the time they were very young. They could cook, clean, sew, and taking care of the younger kids was a big chore of theirs. As most became teenagers, though, even more was expected. Many of them had to go to work outside the home, and it was their job to help support the family. Now, if the family owned a farm, kids were put to work doing chores even younger. Everyone in the family was expected to pitch in. But the real test came when the jobs disappeared. Even if a 13-year-old was willing to and able to work, it didn't do much good to anybody if there were no jobs. There were hundreds of stories about families who were just not able to feed and clothe everyone. I can't imagine that. I have two children, and I can't imagine the feeling that the parents must have had. But because of that, sometimes at least one of the children, usually the eldest boy, had to actually leave home. In fact, did you know that at the height of the Great Depression, there were 250,000 teenage hobos roaming America looking for work? Sheila, some of these kids were only 12, 13, 14 years old. But it wasn't just boys who had to hop trains and hitch rides. It was girls, too. I mean, girls, most people remember it as being just the boys who did that. There was a lot of girls that had to do that, too. However, more often than not, the girls stayed near home and married. That relieved their family's responsibility of feeding and clothing them. And so even though it kind of sounds like they, you know, were marrying them off into a bad situation, that was never the parents' intent. The parents' intent was to truly build a life for their daughter and their children. And sometimes that was the solution.
You know, it's always interesting, I think, where at least nowadays, you know, you take a look at, you know, if anybody suggested any of these things in this day and age, you know, let your child get married at 16 or, you know, send them to work because, you know, they can't go to school because they have to go to work. I mean, people would not understand that in this day and age.
Exactly. Right.
Now, was it unusual for a girl that age to have to make such life-changing decisions like marrying for survival?
No, not at all, in fact. Marrying at 15 or 16 or 17 was actually quite normal during the 1930s, and kids themselves felt a huge sense of responsibility towards their families, so they always tried to do what they thought was best for everyone.
Now tell me, how is Suze unique? Not just during this era, though I'm interested in that, but her personality itself.
Well, I think one of her traits that might be considered a little odd today is her emotional strength. And let me give you an example of what I mean. I don't have the book in front of me, but I think it's chapter 27, when Suze attends a funeral of someone that she loved very much. I won't give away who that is. When her fiancé asks if she needs a handkerchief for crying into, Suze tells him no and says, "I'd just be crying tears for me, and there's no sense in doing that." Then she tries to explain that the one who has died, the one that they're burying, is already on their way to heaven, and she says that tears won't help them on their way. So in those days, maybe more so in places like the hills of Arkansas, I think kids were raised with a different understanding of life and death and of living and dying. Not shedding tears was actually a sign of strength. It was something that they were proud of. Now, that's not saying that Suze never cries, but if she has a choice not to, she sees no sense in doing it. And I think that might be her most unique quality.
Now, there's a level of desperation that always seems to be a backdrop to this era. You know, how did you keep the book from getting too depressing? Or did you use that fact to shape some of the characters and their responses?
Well, I won't tell you about all the times my characters made me cry while I was writing this book. but Suze, the main character, she actually spoke to me a lot during the writing of this story. And it was her emotional strength that was kind of like a well that I drew from to be able to tell her story. And I did have fears about this story being a depressing read because a lot happens to these folks. But I trusted Suze to let me see the story through her eyes, and to her, it wasn't depressing at all. It was just real.
I like that. You know, and I knew that was kind of a double-edged sword question. It is the Great Depression. But you know, I kind of want people to realize that it's not. This isn't some kind of, you know, this kind of a downer book. There's actually, she's so remarkable, and there's a lot of poignancy to the story. This really is, you know, an amazing story of strength. It really is. And I want to make sure that that comes through and that the listeners, you know, hear that about the book. Now, tell me a little bit about, let's talk about the secondary characters. Who are some of your favorite secondary characters in this book?
Well, there's a whole slew of them, isn't there? But the most important ones, I think, are Mama and Daddy and Henry and Cora. Henry is the older brother whose heart is good, but he sure lacks a bit in his decision-making skills. Cora is the feisty 12-year-old sister. Well, and here's a secret for you, Sheila. When I first started writing this book 15-some-odd years ago, Cora was actually the main character, not Suze. But Suze kept pushing herself to the forefront, insisting that this was her story. So thank goodness I listened, because she's wonderful. However, Cora may get another chance in the future. She's just too loud and bossy to ignore sometimes. But as far as their parents go, their names were John and Emma, and they are just extraordinary people, in my opinion. Mama's faith in God is nearly earth-shattering. So she tries to teach her kids to follow a righteous path. That's not to say that her faith isn't tested, but that takes a whole other direction from your question. So let me just say that both Mama and Daddy are fair, loving, strong, and each independent in their thoughts and opinions. They're good people.
Now, you do a wonderful job weaving the issues and pressures of that era into shaping Suze's life. But then you throw her into an event that starts to show us how different she is, her strengths, her fears, her hopes. How did you create Suze, and did you have a journey in mind for her internal conflict and growth when you started the story, once you realized it was going to be her story?
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, that's another great question, Sheila. No wonder you're such a great radio host. These are great questions. As I mentioned earlier, it was Cora who I thought this story was first about. So Suze had a hard time pushing herself through. But an interesting writer thing happened. At first, Suze had a different name in the story when I first started writing it. And for the life of me, I could not get a handle on her personality. My poor husband had to listen to me mumble and grumble about that not being her name. Then one day, out of sheer frustration, I just kind of sat back and shouted, "Tell me your name." And clear as a bell, she stepped up and said, "My name is Suze. Well, Susanna is my God-given name, but folks never call me by it." So in amazement, I said, "Suze? As in S-U-E apostrophe S?" And she said, "Nope. Mama didn't want to mislead me by giving me a possessive spelling. She said the only things that truly belonged to us were our beliefs. So she taught me to spell my name S-O-O-Z-E. And I can tell you, from that moment on, Suze and her story took off, and I just hung on for the ride."
No, I love it. I love that. Now, the book is out now. What are some of the responses you're getting from readers? Like, what are they really liking about this story?
Well, it is new. It's brand new. It actually came out, it was released on the 9th to Amazon, but the 10th to the rest of the world. Amazon was on the ball on that, I guess. So it is brand new. But so far, my favorite is having people like yourself liken the story to a John Steinbeck story. He's always been one of my favorite authors, and I have probably read The Grapes of Wrath and Of Mice and Men a dozen or more times, so his writing has had a great influence on me. But honestly, the comments that have touched me the most are those who say that the story gave them the push they needed to stay strong through a difficult time, or even one reader who said that it renewed her faith and stamina to be bold for her family. I want this story to empower readers, allowing them to say, "I'm going to do what's right, not what's expected."
I like that. I like that. Well, I'm sure you're going to get lots of additional emails as the word gets out. It's one of those, I really see this book as being one of those word-of-mouth books. Just, you know, people reading it and being affected by it and then telling a friend, like I've already done. You know, I was talking to my mom. My mom and I both love to read the same books. She actually runs a book club. And I was telling her, you know, that pretty much the same thing I told the audience. Read that first page. You're going to see what I mean. You're going to love it, and it's going to draw you in like you can't help yourself. Once you just start Suze's story, once you just get that first taste of the kind of the cadence and flow of the words of the story, it pulls you in, and I really love it. And I think that's something that that really speaks about a book. When you have somebody say, "I read this, and I want somebody I care about to read it too."
Yes.
I think that's an amazing book. That's when you know you have an amazing book. Now, who do you think will enjoy the book? Like, what kind of reader do you see liking this kind of story?
Well, I hope everyone does, because it's not just a story about a 16-year-old girl. It's a story about a family and their trials and tribulations, as meager as they may have been in 1932. But I wrote this story with as much historical accuracy as I possibly could so that readers could trust in the details. With that in mind, I think probably historical fiction fans of all ages would enjoy the story. And I truly hope that high schools and colleges will find it for their students, too.
Oh, you know what? That I could see that happening, too. Like you say, you can tell. You could tell that there's research in there. Not like there's just a bunch of facts thrown in, but
correct.
Reading it, you feel so kind of emerged into that time period. As I'm reading it, I really do feel this is real. Like this is what it was like in that time period, and it's a little eye opening if you don't know a lot about the Great Depression. So absolutely, I could see this being, you know, being a book that could be read in the classroom, and a lot of different kinds of talking points, not just the history of it, but, you know, the social aspect of it and what it,
right.
what it was like being 16 men and being 16 now. You know, 16-year-olds in this day and age could look and see the things that Suze had to consider and had to do in her lifetime. They would be just flabbergasted.
Absolutely. Okay. And of course, I'm sure you remember as well as I do, and probably a lot of the listeners, but truly some of the books that touched us most in our lives, we were made to read in high school and college, and those are still some of our favorite books that just walked with us through life.
That's so true. That is so true. Now tell me, what is next for you? Are you going to write something else? Are you going to continue on your writer's journey?
I actually have just recently finished writing a middle grade fantasy that's set in the Southwest. It's set in Arizona. It's tentatively titled The Talisman, and it's already under publisher's review. They've actually shown great interest in it and have had it for a little bit of time and are very receptive, so I have high hopes for it. But I'm also putting finishing touches on another middle grade fantasy. And then after that, I'm going to start writing something different. I'm going to try to write a new adult novel, which is set in the beautiful hill country of Texas. And I'm really excited about it. The characters have already started talking to me, so I can't wait.
That's exciting. That, you know, when you've already kind of got that, like you said, the characters are already starting to talk to you. You know, you're starting to kind of get to know each other a little bit. So that's, I'm really interested in that as well. You're going to have to come back.
I will.
Come out. So tell me, where can people kind of find and interact with you online?
Well, the best place would actually be my website, which you mentioned at the beginning. It's ksjones.com. And from there, they'll be able to find me on Goodreads, Pinterest, Facebook, LinkedIn, and a few other places like Google Plus as an example. On Pinterest, I actually have a page dedicated to Shadow of the Hawk, and I show a lot of the items that appear in the book, so it's kind of fun.
Oh, now could you send me a link to that? Because when we put the podcast up, I like to put little extra things in there, because sometimes the people who listen live, they don't have an opportunity to jot something down. Or, like, we'll talk about your Pinterest, and they'll be wondering, you know, oh, what's that look like?
Yeah.
I would love to get that, maybe your Facebook URL, so people can go over there, and if they've read it or if they have questions, they could just go directly to you and like your page and interact with you. Definitely the Pinterest. I mean, you already know I'm a visual person. I love you know, the book trailers. I'm on Pinterest. I'm on Pinterest as well, so I'm going to go stalk you over there as well.
Great.
It really, you said Pinterest. I was really excited because I love to see pictures like that, especially after you read it. You know, and then you go back and you see kind of what was in your mind or the things that inspired you. That's very interesting. So Facebook and Pinterest, and it sounds like you have a lot of things going on, and it sounds like you have a real love for kind of that a particular age. You're saying, you know, middle school to new adult.
I do. I'm, you know, I don't think that we actually choose the genres that we write in. I think they choose us, and as long as I have such wonderful company, I'm happy.
You know what? I absolutely believe that. I think there's just stories call to you sometimes as much as you think of them. And, you know, it's when you have that marriage of, you know, that almost like a perfect storm of, you know, you have the story that calls to you and you fall in love with it and you dedicate yourself to it and you see that love for that story. You know, I think that when you have both of those things happening, that's when you get a book like Shadow of the Hawk, where it's a joy to read it.
Well, it was a joy to write it as well, so I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This has been just, I knew we were going to have fun because I already love the book, and you and I have already spoken. I thought it'll be so great to just kind of be able to chat with you and get to know a little bit more about kind of the behind the scenes and stuff like that. So thank you so much for joining us.
It has been my pleasure, and you've been wonderful to chat with, Sheila. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. Don't forget, you can find us at readersentertainment.com. You can stop by. I'll put the podcast up there. I'll put all these links up there for you. I'll get those from Karen. Make sure that you get them. So stop by and leave a comment about the show. Go check out our Facebook or website or Pinterest. I'm Sheila English, your host, and happy reading, everybody.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.